I feel like
he's born of this. He's born of the heights of the internet.
He came out of the fucking primordial pool of
trolling
and internet shit, and
yeah,
just a sad internet boy, and just
a sad internet boy.
Send the link.
Welcome to Send a Link, where we analyze the latest feeds and reads. I'm Brandon Harrison with my co-captain, co-pilot, and co-internet navigator, Deej Dollars. DJ, how are you making your way through the net lately?
Man, it's just like a never-ending torrent of shit that you have to make sense of. But I'm doing my best, probably like everyone else.
I'm glad to hear it, man. You know, it's been a little bit, but we're back once again, you know, potting for you guys.
Somewhat.
But the internet, which we were starting off to talk about, as we want to do, we usually do feeds and reads, right?
Yes.
You know, that's what we do here, feeds and reads.
Yes, feeds and reads.
But today, I think a lot of our topics revolve around the effuse, undulating blob our social, I don't want to call it failures, but our social struggle, the birthing of a new mental society, the pains, the screaming, like Ace Ventura 2, when he comes out the rhino's ass.
Yeah.
That's what's happening now for society and their interaction with the power of the internet. It's too much for our minds, this sort of singularity, and it's affecting us in so many ways, not only personally, socially, and annoyingly politically, in ways that we couldn't imagine back, you know, chilling to, you know, AIM and all that kind of shit, and Napster, all the cute disruptor of the internet. And now it's like almost a social singularity that's happening in a way that it's not fun anymore. And it's difficult.
I think it plays out in extremes. I think it's worth mentioning that because of the internet and things like our, you know, behemoth American social media services, you had this massive climate protest today, right? Isn't that?
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
And aside, I went. I was.
Oh, you were there?
No.
Oh, you were there?
No. I'm full of shit. I was being dragged along to a trip to vaunted bath and body products company, Lush.
Oh.
And as I approached the door, they were closed for the climate protest.
Oh, man, was that woke capitalism, as they say?
Yeah, I was like, just because of that, I gotta.
How much was that
not
shirt?
Eat meat on one day, or I don't know what I could do. Well, that's right.
Well, no, man, we got paper straws, man. Paper straws are going to save us all. So, yeah, I mean, it plays out in so many disparate effects that it's even hard to put your mind around just how much society has been flipped on its head or subverted or, you know, strengthened or heightened just through the pervasiveness of the internet and particularly social media. And I think you're probably leading me into the latest read I have. I don't remember the last time we had a book on here. We talked about a book.
So off pod, we talked about this, guys, because we know we're feeds and reads, and we usually talk articles, right? And I wanted DJ to guess what was the last read we had on this podcast that was a long form book, one that was preferably physical. And I'm going to give you three guesses, DJ, because you can figure it out.
Is there any hint associated with it?
The hint is, I'll give you one guess, and then you can ask for a hint. You got to give me a guess first, because you can figure this out. It is a book.
Was it
prominent? And we've been potting for a long time.
Oh.
So I think you might.
I think I know it. Did you read it?
I tried to.
Okay. Was it Crippled America?
Yes, it was. I'm frowning.
Damn.
Scowl.
And that was back when shit was funny.
Yeah, that's when it was, you know.
Oh, Crippled is funny. Yeah. Crippled America was one of these bullshit attempts that every single presidential candidate does. They come out with a book with some, you know, super presumptive name that is not even ghostwritten, but co-written, aka damn near completely written by someone else.
That relates to their campaign.
Yeah, that is correlated with their campaign and their campaign platform. And it's sold at all of the campaign stops and is just used as a separate vertical for that person. And this one happened to be soon-to-be President Donald Trump's book. with this fucking scowling face. I forgot that we did that shit. That shit was like all jokes at the time.
And it's funny enough, as a topic on this podcast today, about, you know, going back and revisiting your social internet history, it's like, damn, we did that. Like, that was a moment. It's a diary of ours.
Everyone has just so many anecdotal stories about just playing around with the Donald Trump for president ethos for jokes, because he was a joke candidate up until, you know, when they called the election that he had, however so many electoral votes. Well, up
until white people were like, yo, these are our nominee. And specifically the idea that's like, you know, we got the Democrats, we had the whites. And the whites were like, yo, like, this is what we're putting up.
Man, I mean, I can empathize with that.
I said it. DJ didn't say it.
Right. I try to be more parsing, but, you know, there's a certain amount of validity to that.
Mine is implied. Right. Talk to me about it, we'll parse.
So, even one of my good friends, one of the homies, he dressed up like Trump the Halloween before he got elected and shit. And it was just all funny. Everybody was just laughing, joking about it. I think it was the Halloween of 2015, if I recall correctly.
Early
on the wave. But, it's not as funny anymore. And that's also why I don't watch Bill Maher anymore, any particular political comedy shows for the most part, just because it's kind of dreary. It's kind of a drag. Then you go on social media, get on the internet, and you see a couple things that heighten you. You might see a picture of Beyonce and her twins, and she's dressed up like Lisa Bonet, and, you know, that shit is
cool. That was cute. I said, ha.
Yeah, the kids are cute. And or you see, I don't know, some shit about Trump is compromised again or some shit about Ukraine or some shit. I saw today. I don't know. Or, you know, you step on the toes of the wrong corner of the internet and you find yourself getting doxxed or concerned trolled by some amorphous figure that you don't even know what you're dealing with. That was for you.
No, I was ready because I was trying to come back to the book, because we're like, dude, the read, and we just get this Trump shit.
Yeah, sure.
But no, and that exactly the point. So, not to belabor things, but, you know, one of our, you know, good friends, friend of the pods, got embroiled in a doxing scandal. And it's like weird to think about that because of the way we live in this political world, and it hits like, damn, this is how absurd this whole shit is. And then now it's like, right there, here it is, the absurdity that we talk about every day. You can't escape it, even if you want to be separate from this practice of internet bullshit. Somehow, its tendrils get you.
Yeah, because it's a frictionless space. Anybody can reach out to anyone. We're talking about out of respect, we may not speculate on quite the specifics per se, but we're talking about fucking Donald Trump Jr. and, you know, Sebastian Gorka, concerned trolled one of the homies. And one of the homies is not some overly political outward person or doesn't have tens of thousands of followers on you know, social media services. So it's just part of a larger bad faith effort to, I guess, for these right wing shitheads to just continue the daily fight and kicking up as much dust and dirt as possible to always make it seem like there is someone to grind an axe against. There's always an opposition. You always try to do some type of either bullshit virtue signaling or showing that you are faux concerned about some type of issue, and you flip it on whoever, like somebody that actually may be actually investing in it. If that makes sense.
You know what's crazy? And too, when I think about how this all works, and as someone who's on the left, but like I have perspectives, I could see how people navigate their logic about shit. How important is it to operate in bad faith. Like, how could you do that every day and not?
It's extremely cynical.
It's so cynical to the point where it's like you're willing to sucking. You to just navigate a space that unpurposefully to the point where it's like, I know I need low taxes so bad. Because I need some slow, and I will just do all of this.
I don't even think it comes down to that anymore. I think it's just power.
Like, but like, yeah, but it's power. Yeah. But to the point where it's like, what power are these individuals? It's just this cultural.
It's being associated with that power.
It's a cultural power.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, is that important?
Well, it's they're kind of on the losing
end. You won't even enjoy your life. You'd just rather be like, I have to keep boxing out. Right. Everybody to the point where I say shit I don't believe. I do all kinds of things I don't believe. I go to things I don't believe. I just do all this because I need to keep.
Just to hold on, just to maintain.
I don't know. To maintain what?
Maintain your group's prominence. That's the idea. So you engage in as much bad faith or obfuscation as possible. And, in hopes that you can deter enough people or to make enough people just throw up their hands and say, both sides are doing whatever, or you may convince a couple people to be down with your cause. You may pull a wool over people's eyes. It's really just to make everything shitty. That's the idea.
And it's crazy too, because when I think about it, I get how they could navigate that in some spaces, like this whole fake news thing. It's like, all right, that's the thing that you, as a conservative, you could flex that and maybe win people over, because it's like, yeah, look, They be bullshitting. And like, that's something that you could say that, oh, sometimes journalists do be bullshitting. Or they, all right. But like, race and shit and like social justice is just like so, it's like the level of bad faith in that. It's just like, nigga, you a Nazi. It's like, what you, like, right. It's like, how can you even navigate that and be like, it's just like, yeah, look, I'm a Nazi. Fuck with me. Look what I'm going to say.
Right. So I'll thread it together just a little bit, right? So in the abstract, one of our friends had, like many people, it's fair to say, bad tweets in the past, or what can be perceived as bad tweets that were done when the individual was in a different place, not as mature, definitely wasn't in the same type of employment situation to where any type of exposure of one's own past can be relatively problematic. And I don't know, there are literally like these, I don't even know, alt-right or right-wing people that don't have a lot of time went and have searched people's profiles to find like old tweets from literally like from 10 plus years ago and using it against them and trying to portray that person as, some type of either racist or bigot, or usually trying to portray them as if they're in violation of some type of modern social compact, if that makes sense.
And it's just so funny because it's like it's a weird situation where it's like they're trying to invalidate the morality of the other side by essentially equating them to them.
Of today, yeah.
Yeah, but look, the idea that, look, you're the same as me. You're also racist. Like, that's not what they want us to do, but that's exactly what they're doing. And it's a weird.
It's to show that, like, oh, we're all bad, so why does it matter? It's just like a completely bad faith type of thing, right? Okay, so a friend finds herself in a situation in which she's getting trolled and doxxed by literally, like, thousands of people over at Twitter, and it's difficult to just turn all that shit off. So they addressed it and basically moved on, and the tide will subside because the trolls will, continue on to the next person. And it's really not that big of a deal. It's just about the daily fight and the daily morass that we all find ourselves on the variety of social media services and just on the internet as a whole, where we're always just consistently spinning and no one really knows how to get out of it. And one of the best people that I've come across that encapsulates that and puts that into words so well is an author by the name of, or writer, journalist by the name of Gia Tolentino.
Shout out Gia.
Yeah, so we've shouted out before. She's a a normal staff writer at the New Yorker, and recently came out with a best-selling book, a series of essays, all under the banner of Trick Mirror, Reflections on Self-Delusion. It came out relatively recently, and I've been a fan of her writing for quite some time. She's a feminist. She lives in Brooklyn. She's from like Texas, from like Houston area, I believe. She's pretty cool, like pretty dope person, and a really good writer. I had been an editor at Jezebel and whatnot before she was brought on at the New Yorker to kind of liven up their staff. I would say they're known to be a kind of like stodgy, super haughty type of publication, and she was probably one of the younger people there at the time. And one of her main emphases is basically on internet and internet culture and the trends that happen within that space and also come out of it. So her first chapter in the essay is all about the internet and, well, essentially the title of the chapter itself is The Eye in Internet, right? Mm. So it's basically how we all each kind of individualize it and build our own cacophonous environment that we create on our own, or at least that's created by the algorithms and the websites that you go on, you frequent, the people that you follow and the accounts that you like, all that type of stuff. Basically, we all create the world that we want to live in, and sometimes things impede in it, and we kind of welcome that to have something to oppose, something to you know, rally against, to know where we stand and where our morals and ethics lie, and what type of, you know, political environment that we want to be in. So nonetheless, it's definitely not, I didn't want to go through any type of whole book or chapter review. I'm not even done with the joint, but essentially when you had told me about what happened to a friend, and we're only referring to our friend as our friend because it's still kind of sticky, especially in the employment situation. And the shit is kind of traumatizing when you have like a Nazi concern trolling you on the internet. So nonetheless, I think just this short kind of summation of the abstracts that she as in Tolentino thinks about where social media has led us in terms of always being in this malaise. So in short, to quote, I'll read it here. The internet is also in large part inextricable from life's pleasures. Our friends, our families, our communities, our pursuits of happiness, and sometimes, if we're lucky, our work. And part of our desire to preserve what's worthwhile from the decay that surrounds it, I've been thinking about five interesting problems. First, how the internet is built to distend our sense of identity. Second, how it encourages us to overvalue our opinions. Third, how it maximizes our sense of opposition. Fourth, how it cheapens our understanding of solidarity. And finally, how it destroys our sense of scale.
Pretty good.
Is that not like right on the head? You can think about all those different like points as it relates to kind of what happens.
Yeah, it's just my favorites are the sense of scale and the other one about solidarity. Those is just like, it's like, right, people are like coming together about shit, false climate marches, whether that's actual, like, you know, it's such a wide range of people supporting other people or not, or the reasons why. And it's because now it's like, what does it take? Nothing.
Yeah, exactly. It takes nothing but a tweet. Like it's the easiest form of virtual signaling possible, which is to show that you're showing something, but not actually, you know, doing anything per se. So you have that, and also the completely flipped sense of scale. So I'm sure the world feels like it's falling down on you when you're getting doxxed by a bunch of right wing trolls, and you put up a message or, you know, a post, maybe potentially apologizing or acknowledging something that happened, and you get 2,000 replies to that, and that's more replies than you ever got in your life. So you feel like, what the fuck is happening? Right. But really, in proportion to all of the people online or all of the accounts that you may have come across, or even if you are, I don't know, successful enough to get tens of thousands of followers, it really is such a minuscule amount. It amounts to very little, but that's just not the way our brains are designed to work. So when you look at such a large number, that just completely flips everything. And then that harms your sense of reality and identity, right, and who you're supposed to find solidarity in. So I don't know. I thought it was dope. I don't know if you really have any more on that. I don't want to completely go through like
a complete whole book reading and everything. Yeah, I'm engaged, and I like that, you know, you brought in a nice tactile read today. Yeah. It's tactile, y'all. He's not, you know, scrolling through what's the Audible book thing?
Audible?
Yeah, but
that's the name of it, right?
Kindles. Not like he's scrolling through Kindle or anything like
that. There's nothing wrong with Kindles.
I mean, there is. It's not paper. We didn't kill any trees for it.
One of my friends came in here and was like, yo, are these all the books you have? I was like, what? He was like, yeah, I think he kind of, well, no, I think he was actually telling his truth. But I'm like, damn, nigga, like, I only have so many books in here. Most of them have been electronic, or maybe I just don't read that many books. Maybe, how about that?
How about that? Yeah. Indeed.
You feel superior? Three more books than me, maybe. Fuck you.
But yeah, I think that would put a sort of a good bow on like the space we're in and how some of us that are more thoughtful could seek to navigate it. I don't know if everybody's gonna get their textual reading to understand how they're being manipulated or how they should move through the space, but at least some of us may. So that's a hope, I guess, in my tacit, less my cynical hopes.
Yeah, I don't. I think everyone, if you're on the shit too much, you acknowledge it's shitty, but no one knows. And Tolentino, she doesn't really come up with any remedies for it for the most part as well. She says it's really going to take some type of societal or economic collapse
for new executive order.
What's that?
New executive order or something. It's like Trump's like, yo, we got to turn the shit off. 7 to 10 p.m. it's off.
Potentially, I don't know. I mean, it's because it's just not a human space. Like it just is not built on normal people's wiring, and it's also addictive. So we can go on and on.
Yeah, well, I mean,
how bad it is.
No, but I mean, with that point, I wanted to actually go to the second thing, the Tekashi situation. Because I feel like
he's born of this. He's born of the heights of the internet.
He came out of the fucking primordial pool of
trolling
and internet shit, and just a sad internet boy, and just
sad internet boy.
I just kind of felt like the whole like as somebody who has pulled away from listening to music, basically, totally, like.
Yeah, yo, you're over 27. After you get over 27, you don't seek out new artists.
You just listen to the same shit you've listened to forever. Yeah. But I don't. I haven't listened to basically anything. I just.
Well, I mean, you're not missing much from him. You think it was always terrible. It's just like really bad.
But the idea, but like his idea and the way he's presented in this Rolling Stone piece from shit 9 months ago, Tekashi 6ix9ine, The Rise and Fall. Great. Oh, talk about good headlines and bad headlines. Today, I guess it's September 20th. This is a timestamp as we look back on our diary when Frederick Douglass was compared to Elizabeth Warren in their photography and the way they interact with photography. Absurdist. So, stink piece.
Well, and you're also bringing this up because he's actually in this trial right now, right?
I'm coming around.
So. Oh, okay.
Tekashi 6ix9ine, The Rise and Fall of a Hip-Hop Supervillain. Which is an amazing headline and amazingly apt because, as you say, all of the happenings over the past few years of this character are coming to a head as he is now in trial testifying about his relation to a sect of the Bloods Denying Trey Bloods.
Ah, yes.
And
a sect. As if it's like, like it's a religious thing.
This is fucking
a chapter.
Unitarians. but the idea of how like this sort of character has morphed through the internet as a lone individual in SoundCloud to a YouTube sort of internet Instagram phenomenon through now sort of in the meme, like not an intentional meme sphere that he did on his own, but in his, you know, snitching, he is like a internet meme, not only his own snitching, his the absurdity of his like court drawings and all, like it's just like a whole thing. And it's honestly sad to see somebody like, I don't know, be like patient one for like somebody just like got absorbed in the internet and just like shredded. Like,
he's like the epical internet Icarus story.
Yeah, it's like the beginning of this shit. Like, it's like you can do anything with the internet and just, I mean, all these SoundCloud people, like the Existencial reference in this article, like all these people sort of just burned up. But him specifically, just like this shit is a movie, dog. Like, I, after reading the profile and this whole backstory about everything that happened and just like the idea of the trolling and all these different internet things in this one sad boy end up with, you know, him, I guess, ending up in having to move to Sweden or some shit. I don't know, like, the outcome of this, even at this juncture.
I don't know.
But the internet is loving it. They're loving now being able to flip upon him and have him be
the Schadenfreude.
The Schadenfreude of the one, I don't know, former internet villain, as I said, now being, just, I don't know, potentially murdered or some shit. Like, because that's the way everyone's like, oh, they're going to get, like, you know, people talk about prison rape and like this laissez-faire shit. It's like, well, he's a snitch. Ha, ha, ha. He's going to get murdered. Ha. Like, it's like,
internet. So shit gets like awkwardly dark.
It's just like notice it. That shit's not funny. Like, and then just like all the people that supposedly implicated and everything. And it's funny.
I heard you got implicated.
I did.
Yeah.
I did.
You non-trade through?
You know, shit happens, man.
Shit happens, man. You know, need a protection on your block.
I mean, not even the way. Now, this was 9 months ago that this article and profile was written. So thorough. Mm-hmm. And it gives a foundation to the way this happened. And the idea that jokingly be like, oh, I'm non-trade. But the way he stumbled into it was part music industry, you know, music industry magic and imagery and all this bullshit.
Yeah, it was a symbiotic effort.
But also his own, like, Instagram influencer skill and all this, like, weird stuff that had to be the perfect confluence for the complete shit show that this is.
Mm-hmm.
I was honestly mostly impressed by the fact that there's a hand in it from big time music industry, as his label was run by like the son of the guy that runs Universal Records, that he started out getting on Instagram by just attacking people on Instagram, and that's how he befriended people. Like, he would just troll them and then use that to befriend people. And then also the backstory of just being a poor kid with no fucking family and all this crazy shit and two different dads, his dad got shot, all this shit, for it to bubble into just a rainbow-haired, tattooed persona over the series of 2-3 weeks that had to shoot a video, got some blood to be in the video, and then now you're along for a wild ride of shit, of where this thing can take you. It can take you into gang world. It can take you into fucking political world. Like, just, we're all so fucking close yet so far. Elliot Grange, sorry. The Grange family, who are humongous in the record industry, he said he felt like this kid was going to be something. And the craziest part of it to me was that the reason all this sort of popped off is that he negotiated his first contract with a record label. He was going to either sign with him or sign with Warner and all these people. But the reason why he signed with him is he was able, Elliot Grange and 10K, was to maintain his creative control over his persona.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of ended up being the sort of impetus for all these gang associations and things like that, because it's like, well, I'm trying to do these sort of things and I want to do the rainbow hair, I want to get these tattoos, and it's like, well, you can do that, or you can move the Calabasas with me and we can continue these albums. Like, no, I have to stay in New York because I have to do these things. And then once he got so deep, it was just like, yo, now you're basically fucked. And it's just like, wow, that could, you can do all that shit in 1 year.
Yeah, you know, he definitely had a whirlwind of a fucking year, yo. It became who performed on his? He had
what, Nicki Minaj. That shit was like the hottest song of the summer last year.
Right. Yeah. He went from that to he went from being some kid that was trolling people on Instagram.
He was a deli boy. Stay Fresh Deli, Grill and Deli, Locust Ave Bodega, cutting ham,
making chopped cheese. To having 69 tattooed 69 times on your body and having a single with Nicki Minaj. Who would have thought? In the span of like 2 years. Within 2 years.
For the off of just the strength of
internet
trolling, but also attacking the right people and making certain like provocative videos and a fucking sex charge and
a lot.
Just so much that patient one could be like the emphasis that we don't have too many more of these, because it's like this is like a way far on the dark side of the way this internet shit works.
I mean, yeah, he put his foot completely down on the pedal and just rushed forward with the entire thing. Usually, rappers get locked up a couple years into the game. I mean, half a decade into the game.
Well, at least for some petty shit, not for like 32 years.
Yeah, that being part of a drug trafficking ring. And him drawing all of the attention to this drug ring. It was probably some niggas running around in East New York or whatever.
I mean, I don't know how many times it should reference. It's like, well, how did you know he was there? It was like, from Instagram.
Yeah, exactly. So he didn't really help them out in that respect, for sure. From what I understand, the money that he was making from the industry, from shows and stuff like that, helped bolster their, illicit enterprises.
Right.
And in exchange, they gave him, street cred and a couple goons to run around with and something to claim. So that's what he felt he gained out of it. But that was far from his origins as a person or even as an artist. As Brandon said, he started off just being a massive provocateur and troll all over the internet that wasn't even really related to music. And we're starting to see that more commonly. And that appears as if it's going to continue to happen. Like people that are just personalities, whether for good or bad, just kind of like flipping their careers into something else. Your best example of people that are doing it relatively right had to be like Cardi B or something like that.
Right.
Wrong is clearly fucking Tekashi, who
both Bloods.
Right. He implicated said, "I forgot."
Yeah, he said like Cardi B was a Blood and shit.
Oh my god, son. Yeah, and now he's in the courtroom singing like a bird, giving up more people than what they
like,
want.
Like good lawyering and shit, because they're just naming people like, so can you tell me about so and so? And he says, "Yeah, this person is this. Are they a Blood?" He goes, "Yeah." So Jim Jones? This nigga's just at home chilling.
No, he's like, pick up the phone, huh? Me? And even so, like that, and that's just spreading the shit around, like unnecessarily too, because even implicating them, like they're not gonna be implicated for any fucking crimes. So I don't even know why he's doing that in the first place. Besides the fact, I don't know, he doesn't want to lie, or his truth is just setting him free. He just feels like maybe this is just an additional part of the troll. Maybe that's what it is. It's him continuing the troll, hoping that there's an out and he'll just be able to play off the out, whatever it is.
And it's actually kind of crazy too, as a weird thing. It's like he actually, that whole sex crime thing, he actually got doxxed about that.
Probably, yeah.
And because of supposedly someone had paid his bail or whatever, and he didn't pay him back. He got mad. He's like, "I'm gonna release this video. Fuck him over." And that's how like it all. It's like so many holes of the internet are in just this one
that flow through their story.
Yeah, and it's just I don't know. We're gonna get out, man. If we move to a compound or live in these like no internet societies. I went to the Center for Reading in Brooklyn.
That is a very inspiring name, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, have you been?
The Center for Reading.
Have you been?
No.
Well, it's by BAM, Brooklyn Academy of Music.
Okay.
And when
That's
you
go, a better name.
Yeah. Yeah, it's better than Center for Reading. Yeah. And when you go, they have place. They go. Oh, they don't have plugs and shit, because it's like, oh, you read in this room. Books. You can't plug your shit into that. It's like, just, read books and don't use the internet in here. And I don't know, man. That must be the way we might have to move.
I don't see that happen. I think
not in like just, large scale, but just like
there's just room for social acknowledgement and maybe some regulation here and there to stave off some of the relative excesses of the internet. And you know, we're still in the baby stages of what's known as like Web 2.0, Web 3.0. So as we grow with it, I think the norms and mores, they'll catch up and they'll meld around what comes in the back and forth of the internet as a whole or what social media does. I think what it's definitely done is it's made people act out their extremes more for the sake of performing some type of veiled sense of authenticity.
Mm. I like that. That's well said.
Yeah. So if you're not quite being authentic, it makes it harder and it makes the walk on the tightrope that much tougher. And that's, you know, the clearest reason why Tekashi 6ix9ine found himself in the scenario. I don't know how many, you know, street rappers that he told to pull up 10 times. Fucking YG, The Game, and it's ridiculous. You know, all these niggas. And you know, because he had to keep up that performance, that portrayal,
and that thereby, was like, avenue into thereby it. Gaining the like love of 50 Cent for just being a troll or shit.
Yeah, from troll to troll, right? But at least, you know, 50 Cent has some age and actually had some relative type of background and clout or supposedly associated with him. Tekashi 6ix9ine didn't have any of that shit, and he was way more wild and makes himself way more vulnerable to shit. It was way too flagrant, and he run around with rainbow colored hair. Like people see that. So I don't know if people just get exhausted with the performance, or people just find more nuance in it, recede a bit, or if we just all, or the majority of us, just kind of fall into this. I guess the morass that our experience is now, where people are just not faking too hard, but just faking a bit. You know, you are at a nice bar, I don't know, they're playing hip hop or something like that, and then your homegirl, she pulls out her phone for Snapchat or IG Live or whatever, and everybody's like,
I don't believe in that.
You don't gotta believe in it, but that's the reality.
No, I mean, like, just like when people do that shit, it's like, I'm like, nah, don't put me on that. not even because like I don't want to. I'm on some like I don't like being photographed or some shit, but I hate motherfuckers doing IG Live when you're out doing something. When I hate girls dancing to their, like, if I see a girl dance to her, like, phone, like, like, who's this for?
It's for the internet. It's for the followers. Yeah.
It's for nobody.
Yeah, but that they don't want to think about that. It's for the likes. I think Facebook is trying to engineer, well, they're trying out engineering that out.
No
the
likes.
The likes. It's just like, or at least not seeing the counter on Instagram.
You just see that it's liked. Or
I don't even know what you see. I don't use the app, but
yeah,
maybe that'll have some latent benefit. Probably not too much, but we've gone far in one direction. Got to pull back.
So I would say to not really put a bow on this, but like to bring it home. Actually,
bring it home.
What would you feel like is your internet, sort of the bane of your internet experience, or something that you feel like, I just do not fuck with this, and it bothers me. And on the flip side, like your worst internet thing, because I keep thinking about it, for me, and I said this off pod that I fucked around, I was like shitting on black feminism on Twitter. I was like, damn.
Did you get flamed, or you just felt bad? Like when you looked at it as an old tweet?
Nah, I just was like, I was going through my old tweets, you know, through the diary of the internet. I was like, oh, okay, all right. A lot of basketball shit talk. Okay, good. Fuck LeBron, all right. Joining the Heat, good. I was like, all these moments. I was like, yeah, that was an interesting time. Right. I shit on Elizabeth Warren one time. I was like, it's like, why am I second grade teacher running for Senate? Like, that's a good one. That's funny. I was like, oh, shit. Died of this black feminism. I was like, whoop. Ugh, gotta figure that one out. But that, just like navigating that was just a funny diary experience. But I know, then on the flip side, what I don't like, regardless of what embarrassing thing I've done, is like that video video in the moment I'm at a place thing, I can't stand it. It turns me off, man. Take a photo.
I don't know. All of the performance presumptive type of shit is annoying to me if and when I see it. But on the whole, I'm just kind of just blasé about it, about most of that shit now. I just leave it for other people. I'm probably on Twitter more than I would like. I don't tweet very much, if at all, besides like random abstract things.
I'll be like, oh, DJ tweet. What
yeah.
was that?
Yeah, but beyond that, I just leave it to each his own. I think it has to be that individual experience. I do think that we as a whole should inform ourselves or have a firm understanding of what it's doing and what the profit engine is, which is you, the individual, when it comes to Facebook and Twitter. So, yeah, with that and knowing how some of the aspects can be addictive or pernicious or take too much of your time, if you understand that going in, then that's better than nothing. And that's also just like the warning label that's on the back of cigarettes. Same shit.
And the sad picture of somebody with their throat cut out or some shit.
Yeah. Oh, the European joint.
I was like, yeah. Nigga, don't do this.
Yeah, the European ones, they're like fucked up looking fetuses and shit on them.
It's like, yeah, you smoking?
Mm. Yeah, they don't go that hard in the US.
DJ.
Lobby too strong.
Grab bag a little bit. The last few things we're talking about. Speaking of that, vaping. According to our president, it's bad, very bad. They're going to do something about it.
And whatever Trump says, I do.
Yeah, I fuck with it. Yeah. Do you foresee this shit happening at all? Like, I feel like most people are like, obviously something bad is going to happen, and then we're going to revisit this. Because it's just the whole idea, it's water vapor, we're all be fine, man. And then it's just like, I don't think so.
I think what most people or most analysts have called into concerned is the fact that a lot of young people use vapes a lot.
Right.
And these are not people that had been cigarette smokers before or nicotine users before, so, or tobacco users before. So the population of tobacco users had been going down over the past few decades, and now it's kind of swinging back up, at least because of vape usage. So
got breaking news too within today, as of today.
That Walmart stopped. I think I see the picture that Walmart is stopping. They're going to stop selling vapes like wholesale or just the flavored ones? Just vapes, period.
Walmart will no longer sell e-cigarettes, the company announced.
Damn. Niggas still got guns. No vapes. Guns and knives. No vapes.
530 cases of lung injuries. That's it. As of September 11th.
Damn.
I mean, it sounds like a lot.
I mean, you got to think like millions of people use these shit, so. You know, you're talking about a percentage of a percentage that are coming up in these cases, which are still bad. Don't get it wrong. Like, people represent these statistics. And it appeared as if, as per this New York Times article, there were, like, some fake Walter Whites in Wisconsin that were making janky homemade THC oils.
What was the shit called? The Blue? What was it?
Oh, and Breaking Bad?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was called like blue crystal or some shit. I don't know. there is a black market industry of people using some of the mainstream vape tools and converting them to allow for THC to be used by them. And apparently, I don't know, maybe these guys or in that region, a bad batch had been made. And so a lot of people have come down sick and or a few cases of deaths have happened. And
that didn't happen in Breaking Bad, did it? And somebody took the boots. I think that did it.
Several people died in Breaking Bad. So, yeah, I'm sure there was some bad batch episode or storyline. But that is actually what caused the national panic is when people were dying in these random cases within this specific region, I guess in the Midwest. So
it was in Missouri,
right? So that actually came from these THC related cases, not actually from the normal vapes, or what's the main one that people get, the kids get, that they love?
Isn't it like
Juuls?
Yeah, Juuls.
So
look at ESB sticks.
Right. So it's the attention is getting heightened. I think, I don't know if they've already done a federal ban of the flavored Juul pods, but if that hasn't already happened, then most likely will be. It seems as if, for the most part, it'll happen on a state by state basis. I think a lot of progressive states and progressive state politics have been reinvigorated to federalism. So they're all like,
yeah,
nah, we ain't doing this shit, dude. Nah, fuck that. And then, you know, every state kind of just does whatever they want to do now, instead of deferring to
feds,
federal leadership when it comes to stuff like this. So I'd be on the lookout for that. I mean, I'm not vaping anytime soon, especially if niggas getting sick of it. So I don't know about you.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm going to pass on the vape game. It's hilarious. But...
All right, well, what else is in the bag?
Well, I mean, I think mostly we went through the bag. I wanted to touch on...
That was one thing in the bag.
I know, but we were talking about...
Shallow bag.
We were talking about the bag earlier. Obviously, the breaking news, as of this podcast, Antonio Brown being cut by the Patriots and his general insanity. And sort of over the past summer and all the various things that he did, we hadn't really touched on it too much. But his antics, from the video to calling people crackers to about to fight people to...
He had like a Terrence Malick grade like a video with the John
Gruden. It was very well made. Like, legally wiretapped this nigga shit. Just like all of this to being cut to then now you got like 2-3 sexual assault things happening, yeah, at the same time. Get signed by the Patriots, catch a touchdown, another one, and then they're just like, all right, dog, it's just too much. And with all of the craziness, there was this period where everyone's like, you know, well, you know, NFL contracts, player empowerment, you know, I mean, obviously things worked out. He's still whatever with New England. It's just like, between that and everything happened with the NBA and tampering and all this shit, the NBA had released new tampering rules today, along with new traveling rules with their board of governors meeting. And it's just like, where are we existing at in this space? And apparently football and basketball, but just the idea of like, how can we act like we want the players to have guaranteed contracts? We want them to be able to have the empowerment to do things they need to do. But on the flip side, it's like, he's an asshole. and our navigation of that is a little difficult now, especially when it's like, of course I want to be on the player's side, but like, what is this man doing? So when is the next person going to do something like this? When is the next person going to like stretch the boundaries of what it means to actually uphold a contract? Because a part of this, I think, is like, I want to be on the player's side to support them, but it's like, you signed, I am paying you. That's what this exchange is. It's not just like, we agreed to this exchange and then you just shit on me just into perpetuity and expect to get a check.
I think there will be a backlash to the player empowerment saga or phase we're in. It won't be particularly overt. The old school kind of slave master owner persona, that's just not hot anymore, especially in the NBA. So it'll be a bit more nuanced. It'll be more like, oh, okay. Oh, Bradley Beal, you don't want to play? All right, well. You just won't play until we're ready to trade you. Like,
and it's fine. And part of it's on them, I guess, to not acquiesce, right?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think the dynamic is definitely vastly different between the leagues, and especially with the NFL being a strong outlier, just because the labor relations are just so shitty over just years of poorly executed labor relations. They still have non-guaranteed contracts. So
shout out to Julio Jones.
Yeah, I mean, so he...
First guaranteed contract, right?
Yeah, so Julio Jones structured his deal. He got a massive guaranteed contract payout, like $60 million or something, like over 60 M's or something like that.
Yeah, something crazy.
Up front. And I don't know the rest of the numbers on the deal. I only saw it in that, and like anecdotally, but maybe the rest of his contract is not, the payouts are not that big year over year, but he got the bulk of his money up front. So even if they cut him, he still is going to get, if not that whole guaranteed money back, because apparently it's sometimes there's stipulations to that. Because, for example, Antonio Brown didn't get any of his quote unquote guaranteed money from the Raiders when he got cut. Because sometimes they have little, you know, little riders.
If you do anything wild, we suspend you.
Right.
And they don't count.
Yeah. Yeah. So they have little loopholes in the contracts. Make sure your lawyers are reading up. But nonetheless, you can just get fucked over way easier in the NFL. And once again, Antonio Brown shows both parts of that story, because he flexed his muscles and acted out, is behaving still erratically, and just someone that is just too online, just extremely online, tweeting and just tweeting through it, as they say, or living through it and displaying too much instead of really having, like, even if he has a team, like, coming down and figuring out a strategy, because apparently, like, people are coming out the woodwork and his erraticness is not earning him any new fans.
Right.
So, for, I guess, just because of all of the grab bag of issues, so to speak, as we're saying, that have been related to Antonio Brown, the person, the entity, the Patriots just cut him one game in.
It's like, you know, we're good.
Just kind of out of the blue, like, fuck it. All right, we'll cut him. Because they just didn't even feel like they were dealing with the drama. That situation is different in the NBA. In the NBA, even if he were this type of personality, they would just kind of have to deal with that shit, because they got to pay him anyway.
Exactly. So you might as well, we were working out. It's like, it's a lot more of a negotiation.
Yeah, and it's kind of just negotiating with yourself. Like, this nigga's not going to, can't leave. We can't cut him, so they could try to waive him.
We could, but it's like, we still got
to
pay him.
Though. Yeah, you still have to pay him. Not the other day. Like, they still have to pay him. It's just more and more of a headache than it's worth if you can't really get much out of it. So the labor to, you know, management or ownership battle is much more even in the NBA. Shit, maybe even the players may even have a slightly upper hand, it appears, in the NBA. Just because there are fewer players and more stars and everything.
Yeah, it's a weird situation, of course, like, considering that a star in the NFL was able to sort of do it because of that. But there's so many other players that don't have the power to do that. Yeah. So it's like it's a two-sided argument. Like, in that sense, Nene and Iman Shumpert are like struggling with this deal with the Rockets, because they're essentially trying to structure their contract to make them a trade chip beforehand.
Okay.
So to the point where the NBA voided Nene's contract, even though he agreed with it, because it was so incentive heavy. The thing was like, oh, we're going to trade him for this value. And then when he gets there, they don't have to play him, and therefore he will never meet any of these incentives. So the value, he'll allow him to trade for such a highly valued player that's clearly not worth what you're paying him. So they're just trying to undercut the finances of the contract. So it's like all these sort of games that could affect other players that are not higher or not as high on the totem pole. So for that side, I still feel the player side. But this whole the antics and the insanity, it's just like, I hope it's not the CTE shit. I'm just like, because it's just absurd. Like, you're just wilding. Like, I don't know what to call it.
Or just doing a lot. Like, and not really helping your case.
Sit down, dog. It's like, chill out.
And it's not anything that you can really substantiate. We can empathize and want him to do well and get one over on the owners and have a great and successful career. He probably would have been on a great team. But, you know, you look at the shit on his face and it's just like, there's just a lot happening with him. And if there's one thing we know about the Patriots, it's just they don't deal with sideline shit like that. So it was surprising for sure, don't get me wrong, but compared to other teams, like if he was on the Bengals, like they'd be having felons and all type of crazy.
Why not? I mean, he was at the right spot, right? He was the Raiders. He fucked that up.
Yeah, because I don't know.
John Gruden was like, listen, just come on, dog, just play. Just make it to the season. Like, you wiretap me, you could fight the coach, you could do all this shit.
You're going to wind up back on the Raiders or some shit.
Ridiculous, man.
Yeah, but the player empowerment. I think there are relative limits to this blank check of goodwill that, especially particularly, I guess, is like black people on the whole, black men kind of like
the Justice Smollett like rule. It's like, you know, I'm trying to fuck with you.
Right.
But you're doing a lot.
Maybe it's like a backroom type shit. Like, yo, publicly, you know, I'm supporting you, son. but come on now. Like really. Nah. Anthony Davis, he played up being injured. He didn't even play in the All-Star game, I think. Nigga just like...
No.
And then they just shut him down to, you know, that wasn't the worst, but that was... It's pretty odious.
It's definitely in poor taste. It's like a whole season of shit didn't try. Like, it's just like, why? You could still get traded. You could leave. There's all these things you could have did, but why did you not have to? It's just, it's in poor taste.
In poor taste. I think I can agree with that. And he wound up where he wanted to go anyway.
Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, it was going to happen. Just like, chill out.
Yeah. There's a window to do it as well. And NBA management is going to be super apprehensive every time one of their stars is within 2 years of the end of their contract from now going forward, unless they make some type of rule changes, because people are just going to be asking out like whenever they want.
Yeah. Especially this Paul George portion. Did you read the Doc Rivers interview you had recently, the past day or so?
I heard that it existed, but I did not read it. Was there anything?
But just the idea that they had a list of people on a piece of paper that they were going to like present to Kawhi in a meeting or whatever, and Paul George was on there, and they weren't sure they can get him, but like he just signed a 4-year contract, and it's just like,
yeah,
all right, well, OKC's blowing it up, so it worked out. But Kawhi in the meeting apparently says, "I like you, you know, I like you, Coach Mr. Ballmer," and I just like, your team's not good enough. You got to have a better team and I'll come. And then they were like, all right. So they just started scrambling. They put it together. But he literally just demanded that. And then they actually made it happen somehow or some way, which is kind of fire.
They mortgaged like a decade of their team to do it.
The way Doc put it in the article was like, well, if you think about it, it's really 3 picks for Paul George, 3 picks for Kawhi Leonard. So
sure. Yeah.
If it makes you feel better.
And players.
Players and players as well. A lot. Definitely a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it remains to be seen whether it's a good deal or not. But also, can Paul George put both his hands above his head right now?
I don't know. You need your shoulders. Kawhi needs his leg. Yeah. There's a lot of issues right now. You know, talk a little hoop up, but yeah, man. I don't know if we can. Is that it? Is that it today? Grab bag could have one more thing in it, but I don't know how much we want to talk about it.
What was it?
What, the Sandy Hook video?
They should just talk about that. You traumatized me sending me this fucking video.
So they never want to have children now. They'll never be safe.
I think in previous instances on the pod, shout out to the background music, Banana Falling, that's what he says on that song.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Fire.
Yeah, I think I've said before, like, you ever have like a real just dark thought or moment? You're like, damn, that shit's scary.
Yeah.
In any instance, like, we're all human. But I remember, I guess my little brother graduated from school. Well, actually, twice. My little brother, he was still graduating from high school. There were, every year now, there are literally school shootings. Every year.
Pretty much.
It may not be a massacre every single calendar school year across the U.S., but there's probably a good chance that there is one. But nonetheless, I think some had happened around the time. I was like, damn, my little brother's in high school. So I'm like, this is good to happen to him. So, like, he lives in Atlanta. They're like, guns are freely available and around down there. Like, that shit could really happen. I'm like, damn, I couldn't even imagine if some shit like that happened to him. Then, and they're not related by any means, but same little brother, I'm happy to say, he enrolls at Morehouse.
Mm-hmm.
And you may not have known, but the day before school started, there was a shooting on the promenade in front of Woodruff Library.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And 2 freshman girls from Spelman were shot.
What?
Yeah.
I don't keep up on this, man.
No, I mean, I don't blame you, but.
But not, but like in like a robbery type shooting?
No. As in like the West End seeped in at the time. There was, you know, sometimes they have like the before school starts, little functions and stuff like that. There was something happening on the promenade, and there were niggas from the neighborhood that were around, and apparently, I don't know, some beef happened, and they got caught in a crossfire. So a couple people got shot, including the 2 girls from Spelman, freshmen. Didn't even start school yet.
It's crazy.
And that's just handgun violence. That wasn't some lunatic, you know, going up in school, but handgun violence is way more prominent than regular gun violence. Nonetheless, my little brother wasn't there at the time. He was planning on going, didn't wind up going. But I'm like, damn, like niggas really just cannot escape this shit. And it's been a continual thing. The same thing 10 years from this year, from my freshman year. The same, literally the same thing happened, basically.
Like, that happened?
Remember the girl, she was a, I believe she, I'm not sure if she's freshman, but a young lady from CAU was killed a couple days before, I think basically around the first couple weeks of school, my freshman year. You were a sophomore. She got killed on the promenade. And then after that, the promenade was dead.
I probably have to remember that
in abstract, but literally like in the same frame, 10 years later, it happened. Something basically along the same beats happens to my little brother.
Crazy, man.
So, I mean, she's crazy. We bring down on a macabre note. No, but
I mean, but is there like statistics? I'm sure there are. Is it like a gun state thing? Like, is it more prevalent? Or is it just like a net? Like, I've always wondered that because I don't want to assume that. Like, I was trying to like verify.
I mean, I think you could go in with a strong, you know, hypothesis that states that have less gun control experience more gun violence. We could check that off pod, but
I mean, should I know it? Just as an RA and that how many people, I mean, gun incidents we had just from being just South shit, just like, yeah, I got my gun. It's like, dog, you have your gun in here, man. Niggas was hiding guns in the top of the fucking thing, air vents and there's roofs and all kinds of crazy
trapped
stuff.
Trapped out, okay.
Trapped out, man.
Yeah.
But yeah. Great way to end the podcast.
Yeah, because you made me watch this video.
It's real though. It was well produced.
Amazingly well produced video, I guess, from the families associated with the Sandy Hook massacre that happened in, I believe, 2012, where a mentally ill person walked into an elementary school and killed a couple dozen odd kids and educators. Their families or people associated with them or the organization, they came up with this super well-produced video. And it's been, you know, making its rounds on social media. And it's basically like a back-to-school thing. And it's just showing all the back-to-school items that the kids could use to maybe help them escape a school shooting.
Yeah.
It's dark. So.
And it's well presented. If it's the same tone as those weirdly chipper back to school buy videos, and then it lets you on to the fact that, oh wait, this is about school shootings later. So it's dark, but well, very well done.
And it's the country we live in. As I pat myself on the back, I like to say we live in a tautological gun cult.
Ooh.
Where the only way to escape the gun is to have a gun. That's the idea.
The only way to escape the gun is to shoot a gun.
Yeah. You know, the only thing that can stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. That's the NRA line.
Or a bad guy with a good guy with a gun. You gotta hold a good guy with a gun. Take him around and shit like, gotcha.
or good luck or luck or some shit.
I don't know.
It's bad. So.
It's bad all the way around.
Guns are bad.
Well, on that note, guns are bad. Our podcast is good. So keep listening to this heat. We got more things in the works. Please don't dox people. Don't shoot people. Don't virtue signal
if you ain't really about it.
Don't virtue signal if you're not really about
it. Don't do shit in bad faith.
Collective bargain. Well, you know, I don't know. All the notes that we hit on today. But really, I like the bad faith one. It's like, just participate. Don't.
If you're a Nazi,
don't troll.
If you're a Nazi, don't call someone out for being a bigot. You can't.
That just
doesn't work.
And if you are in a position where you're being called out by Nazis about being a bigot, just turn it back on them. Be like, don't be a snowflake. then we're just in a the snake is eating his tail. Then what are we gonna do now?
But hard, son. Because number one rule is don't feed the trolls.
You don't feed the trolls. I mean, don't really do it. But if you find yourself in the den of trolls, you're in the lion's mouth, just eat the lion. Start eating them back, and then you're like, "Oh, what's happening here?" Like, this just becomes. We all acknowledge. Someone will have to acknowledge that this is absurd, is it not?
Yeah,
because it is. Another great pod, DJ.
We try. We back.
You got a good note for us to end on here.
I thought I gave like a, some. I don't know, man. Have a good weekend.
Parting words, man. You
know. Parting words. Love each other. Operate in good faith. Be good people.
Cool.
Oh, I listened to the last pod we did, and for whatever reason, I listen to everything. I listen to a lot of podcasts, for better or worse, and I listen to them all at like 1.5 times speed. Mm. So I'm just like super used to it. It still sounds, you know, audible to me.
But you're getting 30% of your life back. I got you.
Sure. And I listened to us on like the normal one. I was like, yo, we sound like we've been sipping lean, or we're in like a fucking Chapter Screwed video or something. So I was like, damn, I'm sounding like mad dumb. But if I put it on a 1.5 speed, I'm like, yo, this nigga's like super like snappy.
This nigga quippy. Say shit all the time. Bow, 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 bang, bang. Yeah. All the funny things to say.
Yeah, so I actually turned it back after I finished that. So probably everyone sounds like that. But I remember I was just like mad perturbed. I was like, why do I sound like this? Do I usually just sound like
hilarious,
mad, like pensive and gaps and thoughts? It's just like, yeah. Just,
So you came back from outer space and shit. Yeah. You're traveling too close to the speed of light. Never get affected anymore.
Fucked yeah, up. Like gravity was just way stronger. Yeah. So that's all I got.
So, you know, listen to everything at 1.5 speed.
Yeah, because you sound way better. You sound way better, man.
Way smarter.
And you get it. You shoot through it faster.
Duly noted.
Duly noted.
Bye, y'all.
Adios.